Well, with the New Zealand election largely put to bed, we can turn our attention to the fast approaching US presidential contest. It is now less than 2 weeks until Election Day on November 3rd. Donald Trump is dashing from rally to rally in a bid to shore up support in key states, while Joe Biden has largely stepped back from in-person campaigning to prepare for the final debate this Friday. In his place, he's deploying his most prominent advocate in the battleground state of Pennsylvania today, Barack Obama. Here to help us catch up on the campaign is our Washington correspondent, Simon Marks. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Corin.
Let's start with the polls. They do show a clear lead both nationally and in the key swing states to Biden, but is it starting to tighten?
It's tightening ever so in very, very small degrees, Corin. I mean, essentially, the tableau of this election hasn't really changed now for 3 months. Joe Biden, in most polls, enjoys anywhere between a 9 and 15% national advantage over Donald Trump, and he's ahead of Donald Trump comfortably in most of the battleground swing states, those states that sometimes vote Republican, sometimes vote Democrat, but also always end up deciding the outcome of the election. Now, we're definitely seeing a small tightening of the race, but it's nowhere near the kind of upending of the situation that Donald Trump would need if he was going to be successful in his bid to turn his cash-strapped re-election campaign around and secure 4 more years. And that's why, behind the scenes, Republicans are getting increasingly panicked about where this election is heading, not just in terms of the race for the White House, of course, but also in terms of their desire, their desperate desire, to maintain control of the U.S. Senate. They may well end up losing not just the keys to the Oval Office, but a majority in the Senate as well, which would represent what one disaffected Republican Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska described the other day as an impending Republican bloodbath.
Tell me why these polls should be trusted more than last time, when we saw strong numbers for Hillary Clinton right up until polling day and they were proved wrong.
I'd love to tell you, but I can't, because I'm not sure that they should be. I mean, I think the reality is that for everyone who was here 4 years ago and went through that experience on election night when what appeared to be inevitable victory for Hillary Clinton just seeped away from her. And let's bear in mind, she won the popular vote. She did win nearly 3 million votes more than Donald Trump, but thanks to the vagaries of the Electoral College, still managed to lose the White House. Well, the Electoral College is absolutely still in place. There's no difference about the way in which this election is being run, apart from the enormous enthusiasm of early voting that we're seeing now, with north of 30 million Americans already having cast their votes. But clearly, this is still an election that could end up having a very unexpected outcome. I think that if you look at the numbers, and if we hadn't all lived through 2016, everybody would confidently be predicting that this was going to be a Joe Biden landslide. The predictions are not as confident as they used to be because of that searing experience 4 years ago.
Right. What's going to change this situation for Trump? I see he's hammering away on the Hunter Biden scandal. There are some media organisations that seem to be running this story and others that don't, from what I can see. Is that going to change the dial?
It will only change the dial if the story turns out to be provable and verifiable. And so far, there isn't a second news organization that has managed to verify the claims made in the New York Post. But we're in this just absolutely bizarre period now, Corin, where the president of the United States hammers away at rallies about Joe Biden running an organized crime family. He talks about Hillary Clinton's emails. He urges his attorney general to launch an immediate criminal investigation of Joe Biden and Barack Obama, who will be returning to the campaign trail in public in Philadelphia in a few hours' time. He's doing nothing to focus on the enormous holes that exist in the Democrats' policy proposals in this particular election.
Well, I have seen him having a go at tax, and that is one area. Yep. Is that going to give him some headway, perhaps?
That is true. Well, he has a go at tax. I mean, he overstates Joe Biden's plans to raise people's taxes, but he does have a go at that. But look, this is an election that in very large measure is going to be decided not just about the economy, but about the future of COVID-19. Joe Biden claims to have a national plan to battle COVID-19. It's very difficult to know what that plan is. There's a 7-point agenda on his website, but even he has conceded that as president, he may not have the authority authority to order a national mandate on face mask wearing. But you don't hear President Trump trying to go after Joe Biden on the details of policy at all. Instead, he's locked into these old arguments about treason and an attempted coup against his government. Right. If you look at his Twitter feed today, he appears to be threatening CBS over an interview that 60 Minutes did with him in the White House earlier this week. This is not the way you attract voters.
So that's not going to win over swing voters, right? That's going to appeal to his base.
I mean, that's exactly the point.
What does he need to do then in the debate? I mean, this debate with the muted microphones.
Yeah, I mean, let's not overplay the muted microphones. The debate's 90 minutes. For 66 of those 90 minutes, the mics are not going to be muted. So there's going to be every opportunity for a repeat of the unedifying spectacle of debate number one. I mean, can Donald Trump do anything in this debate truly to turn the tide? Look, if you want to pull floating voters, and there aren't that many of them left out there, to your side of the aisle, they want to hear that you've got some serious-minded ideas for how to fix the country. It's not clear to me that what they want is to hear you essentially calling Joe Biden, you know, a modern-day equivalent of the Gambino family. I mean, it's especially when the Trump family itself faces so many questions about the financial advantages they have derived over the course of the last 4 years. So, look, no single debate can ever turn an election around. But certainly, I think if we see another very unedifying set of circumstances and a president who won't let his opponent get a word in edgeways, I think Republicans will only further have their heads in their hands.
Now, just finally, Simon, I suppose it's a scandal breaking. Rudy Giuliani, who's been a close ally of President Trump, used to be the warm-up man at his rallies, he is in quite some bother.
He certainly appears to be in some bother, and this relates to the imminent release of the new Sacha Baron Cohen Borat film. For the uninitiated, Sacha Baron Cohen several years ago created a persona, Borat Sagdiev, purportedly a journalist working for Kazakhstan TV, who caught a large number of people in embarrassing positions earlier on. The second film is about to be released, and we are now seeing screen grabs of Rudy Giuliani, I think it's fair to say, on a family radio program, in a compromising position on a bed, accompanied by a young actress who is pretending to be the teenage daughter of the lead character, Borat Sagdiev. Quite how Rudy Giuliani is going to explain all of this is very unclear. Apparently, the scene culminates with Borat Sagdiev bursting into the hotel room where Mr. Giuliani is lying on a bed in a compromising position, and the Sacha Baron Cohen character screaming at Rudy Giuliani, "She's 15, she's too old for you," which gives you a sense of where that particular movie is going and what it might be doing to the reputation in the United States of Donald Trump's personal attorney.
Simon Marks, thank you very much for that.